Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another I Like You,
But You're Wrong. This is Dean.
And I'm Robert, and we're back for another episode. This week, we don't have a guest, but last week was really fun with Dean's son, my brother-in-law, Justin. Ins and outs of Chick-fil-A.
The longer he talked, the funnier he got.
Yeah, it was very enlightening on how the... You know, what approaches the company takes.
And if his you point didn't listen to it, you need to go back and listen to that one. You will, you'll get a kick out of it. And it's got a lot of insight, like you say. And then he gives his personal insight, like on his degree and a few other things that were kind of interesting.
Yep. And hopefully next episode we'll have another guest. We're working on it. But we wanted to make sure we got this one out there. And this week... We went a different route with the beer instead of a local brewery. Well, we'll get back to those probably next episode. But this one actually caught our eye. Patagonia, which I don't think they have anything to do with the clothing company. But it's they're making this beer. It's a pilsner called Bohemian. And it's pretty. I liked it.
I drank it, and it's okay. I don't care for the aftertaste. It's a little too strong for me and my liking. But it really wasn't as bad as what I expected. And like I say, it was just the aftertaste I really didn't care for.
I tell you what, the slogan for the beer is buy a case, plant a tree.
That's pretty impressive.
Usually, I'm not a very... nature-driven person, I don't really do a lot for the environment per se as far as promoting things. But you know what? If you tell me that if I drink this beer and I'm helping the planet,
then you're gonna drink more beer.
I'm gonna drink more of this beer.
It's a great selling point.
It's buy a case, plant a tree. If you do a keg. It's 17 trees.
Are you kidding me?
So, we need to drink more.
Oh.
Drink to save. All right? And trees create oxygen.
Okay, I need to reach out because I like you, but you're wrong. But that means I need to reach out to my beer company then and see what they can do. Because if they did that with Ultra, they'd be planting a lot of trees.
Yeah. Okay, so...
You know that my... Football league is already over, and you go ahead and say it. You were going to say,
I told you.
Yeah, I know. You said that from the beginning, and we didn't need more football. The only thing I was concerned about was, and once again, this was, all in the paper, is from their thought process to the first game was a little over 8 months. They said it should take a couple of years to put that together. To have the funding, extra funding, et cetera. But I love their idea. I love the game plan. I loved how they mic'd them up. I love the speed of the game.
Yeah.
Every game I watched, I thoroughly enjoyed. But they literally shut it down. Spurrier got the call about an hour before practice. So he said, the guys ain't getting paid, so we're done here.
Yeah.
Like that. And he said, in Spurrier's statement, he said, well, give me 2 days. I'll be back in Gainesville. Now, I will say that his quarterback, Gabbert, and one of the linemen who also had professional experience, they were picked up before the end of the day.
Yeah.
Both of them are already back in the NFL, signed contracts. They're golden. They're good to go. So I hope more guys got picked up for the little bit that they, got to see. But it was extremely disappointing to me. But it seemed like everybody in the paper expected it.
Yeah, like I said, I expect that. I don't think we need more football. But I will say that I would agree with them how fast they moved to put the league on was the only way they were going to get that league going. I think if they would have waited, how you were saying that you really needed more time to develop that, I think it would have never... It would have never left off the ground.
And I think the reason you got the people involved, I mean, you're talking coaches. You got Spurrier. You got Mike Marks, who's won a Super Bowl. Okay? He was one of them. You got Singletary, I mean, some of the coaching was unbelievable. Yeah. But I still say that's because Polian and Dick Ebersol started this.
Yeah.
And everybody knows both of them, how successful they've been in their careers. So they jumped on board. And then I would jump on board if Spurrier, Singletary, Mike March were all the coaches. If I'm a player, I'm jumping on board too.
Yeah.
It looked like the real deal.
I think also, you know, from a business standpoint, you know this from experience that you can't, you know, if you have somebody saying yes, get the handshake, get the deal done, and get it moving fast.
Right.
Because you do not want people overthinking a deal.
Exactly.
And I think that that's what they did.
I
applaud them for trying.
I do. I hope the NFL paid attention because, like, there's just a handful of things that if the NFL used, when they do the decision on throwing out the challenge.
Yeah.
They go upstairs, you see them, you hear them talking, you know, between each other, like you and me are right now.
Right.
What do you think? Well, I don't know. What do you think? Oh, I think he touched it. Oh, I think he didn't touch it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed that. I enjoyed the no kickoffs. Yeah. You had to go for 2 points. It just made it a much more interesting game.
Yeah, I like that you could hear them, Mikey, because, you know, I sometimes think that they go into that huddle and they're like, so we know how we're going to call this, right?
Exactly. You
know, like, I just
say, where are we going for dinner after the game?
Yeah, like, you know, we're just going to act like we're going to view this.
Exactly.
Because obviously there's no way we're going
to. Well, like, when we were kids, okay, Robbie, you go to the end zone, I'm going to throw it as far as I can.
Yeah.
That was our play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but yeah, once again, I wish those guys luck. You know, they gave it 110%, and hopefully a bunch of them will get picked up. But see, I don't think that Vince McMahon's league is going to make it either.
The XFL, he tried one time.
I can't believe he's trying again.
Yeah, I don't see.
We'll see if it gets off the ground.
We need that.
But okay. Anyway, we got that out of the way, and you can go ahead and say you told me so.
Yeah, I did. Well, I'm not going to say I told you so. I said you were wrong.
Yeah.
All right, and then you said you saw something about you read an article about minor league baseball?
Yeah, and it touched home a little bit with me. And we're going back 40 years with me. But what I read today in the sports page was an article about a young man who was so excited. He actually got drafted, I believe, in the second round. Got a small signing bonus. Played for, I think, 2 seasons. And then he was cut. Now, the issue being, he went on to explain why there's so many of them in trouble, and in trouble financially, because in the minor leagues, you make between $600 and $1,500 a month, and depending on which league you're in, there's 5 or 6 different leagues. Some of them are 4 months, some of them are 6 months, some of them are 8 months, but you only get paid if you're playing. You don't get paid in the offseason, and that's all you get paid. You're responsible, which I did not know. You're responsible for your own equipment, your own cleats. They don't give you anything. Mm-hmm. You have to have your own everything. So these guys are trying to make it to the next level.
Yeah.
And they're constantly getting behind. He was in so much credit card debt, he put a GoFundMe thing, you know, up for that. But the reason about the article was to say that all the minor league teams do this, okay? Toronto Blue Jays just stepped up to the pump, and they raise their pay 50% across the board for their minor league teams. No one's ever done that, but no one else followed. They're the only ones that have done it so far. Right. And these guys are struggling trying to become, and like he says, you're out there and you're actually working 40 to 80 hours a week playing ball.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have time to do anything else, mm-hmm, except for during the off season. And if you get a signing bonus, he said 80% of the signing bonuses you don't collect till the end of the first season.
Right.
That's part of the deal. So it's a rough way for these guys to try and get ahead. Everybody thinks, oh, well, you know, they're playing Major League ball. They're not. That's why in the 70s you could play semi-pro, which we call rookie league. They paid for your travel. They paid for your lodging. They paid for your food. You never reached in your pocket, but you did not get paid. So you could still go and play college ball, or you could sign with a professional team. So the only drawback to that is you'd be on the road for 3 or 4 weeks, then you don't go back out on the road again for 2 or 3. So it worked out perfect for me because I could work and then go and do other things. Mm-hmm. But these guys have a rough way to go, and I didn't realize it was quite as tough as he's making it out.
And I mean, I'm sure that the rules have changed over the years on it. I looked it up at how many leagues there are with baseball, because everyone always, you know, talks about baseball, about, you know, it's like the, I don't know, some people, you know, they like the easiest sport or something like that, or I don't think that you understand how hard baseball is competitively when you look at what you have to go through to get to a major league level. So we have AAA, AA, Class A Advanced, Class A Short Season Leagues, Class A Short Season, Rookie Advanced, and Rookie League. Two. The Rookie League is the lowest you are.
Right.
And each of these leagues are then made up of sub-division leagues. So like with Rookie League, you have Arizona and Gulf Coast League, and then one international league of the Dominican Summer League.
Right.
So within these, you have leagues within them. That's how much you're competing overall for just a chance.
And then if you have a good year, that's what happens, because a friend of mine was a pitcher, and he had a phenomenal first season. But he thought he was done, like you say, after the 5 months, right?
Yeah.
He came home. He was home for 3 days. They loaded him on a plane. He went to Puerto Rico, and he played winter ball, because in Puerto Rico, it's 70 degrees every day.
Yeah, I mean, it's summer every day.
He went there and had to play. I mean, and you have to, because you're under contract. They own you. That's how it works.
Yeah. And now, so what was interesting is I looked up, I didn't look up the salary, you know, more or less of every league. But what I did do is I pulled up the average for AAA, which the average is actually $80,000 a year for AAA. But you understand that AAA is you're knocking on the door to get in. You're basically good enough. You need
someone to get hurt.
More. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, someone get hurt. Something
correct
that they see.
Your goal. I have many friends that play in you know, single A and double A. Many friends, and you know, someone played way too long, but they still hung up there because their whole goal, like you said, you want to get to AAA, because when you get to AAA, that's one phone call away. You're on a plane the next day. You know, and we can go back to as far as Robbie Thompson, because we knew him personally. He played with my brother. They won the Little League World Series in 74. But I can tell you that Robbie played at University of Florida, was a great ball player, obviously, because he, you know, made it up to the Giants. But he was in AA, and they had two people have season-ending injuries at second base, and then the third person they had signed with another team. So overnight, overnight, he went from AA up to the major leagues while they were looking for a second baseman. And he did so well that he never went back down.
Yeah, all you got to do, once you get it, they can send you back down. But if you don't make a mistake,
you're there,
it's very hard that they're going to send you back down.
Exactly.
Now, what's interesting, so I said the average for AAA is $80,000 a year.
I did not know that.
All right.
Yeah.
But basically, you're probably going to get a contract at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so that's $80,000. Double A, you drop to $1,500 a month for 5 months.
Totally.
That's a whopping $7,500.
Well, that's what this guy said. They had to room with three and four guys to be able to afford to rent an apartment.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
And then say your season's over and they don't send you to another league like you're talking about.
Yeah.
You don't get paid again until the following September.
Exactly. So then, and then imagine all the leagues even lower than this. Like you said,
the ones that don't even play
for free. So I think that this is a problem. Now, you know, their excuse, baseball's, you know, defense is that, you know, all these minor league teams, you're supposed to look at them as you want to do this for fun or because you love it, not because you're making money off of it.
Correct.
And this is
the drawback is to build your team, just like the coach of the Astros said, I'm going to build a team. It's going to take me 4 years or 5? I think he said 5 and he did it before.
Right.
He goes, I am not going to get high dollar players. I'm going to keep the players we have, and I'm going to build it from within our farm system. But he's talking about AAA is what he's talking about.
Yeah.
He is not talking about rookie league, single A, double A. Yeah. He is not. Because once, like you said, once they get to AAA, they can play for any team out there.
Yeah.
It's just they have to have the opening.
Yeah. Yeah. And then so I looked up also the a little bit of the draft. And
that's a weird deal.
Which is interesting because, you know, with the draft, you know, you could have never have signed to enter the draft, you could never have signed with a major or minor league team to enter it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If a team passes their pick on the draft, I didn't know this, they're done for the draft. There's 50 rounds.
Right.
But at any point, if you pass on a pick, that's it. You're done. That's it. You're not picking anymore, essentially, because you didn't pick.
Right.
So you don't get in if you've never signed with a major or minor. You could come straight out of high school, never have gone to college.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you go to college, you have to wait till you're a junior or senior.
Correct.
And, if you go to a junior college or community college, you don't have to wait till you're a junior or senior.
Correct.
So
a lot of my friends did that.
So, but
which is what I was going to do.
You know, at what point do you know if you are or aren't good enough? Now, what I would say is yes, that would be smart if you did. You know, like you said, if you put all of it in those 5 months,
right?
Like let's say that double A, mm-hmm. if you're good enough for double A. Again, that's right before AAA. So
correct.
You're really good at AA.
Yes.
Yeah. So you do those 5 months and then you go to school for the rest of the year as a student. Probably, hopefully, you get a few scholarships from the community college or junior college.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I had scholarships offers to a couple of 4-year schools, and then I lived in West Palm, so I was offered a scholarship at Palm Beach Junior College. In 78, turned them all down because I was going to be a major league ball player. I didn't need any of these people's help. Well, my father pushed and pushed and pushed until I didn't have a choice. So I took the flight and the trip to Middle Tennessee State.
Yeah.
And that's what opened my eyes because for the first time in my lifetime, I actually went on a ball field where there was at least, and I'm giving this big favors, okay?
Yeah.
There was at least 5 or 6 guys that were better than me.
Oh, yeah.
And I had never experienced that.
Yeah.
You know, in all the years playing ball, I could compete with anyone, okay? So I was quite cocky, and they knocked me right off of my little threshold there. So it sort of opened my eyes. So when I came back and was playing the travel ball, I realized right then that, you know, I mean, like I say, I woke up one day in Tennessee. And you know, we've been there for 2 weeks playing, and I was like, what the hell am I doing? I ain't going farther than this.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I came to that realization. If I got signed, I'm never going above single A.
Yeah.
Like you say, unless somebody gets hurt, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean? So, was I a good ball player? Absolutely. Could I hold my own and not embarrass myself? Absolutely. Could I go all the way to AAA? No. So, you come to that realization. So, I couldn't do what these poor guys are doing. I feel sorry for them.
You know, it's difficult to say because I believe the thing is that these guys put themselves through it. And obviously, you know, maybe some of them aren't as good,
mm-hmm.
you know, when they go into it and they still have that dream. I think, though, that if you really want to get better, I mean, you're only going to get, you may be a stud in high school, but you will never get better than what you're at, the level you're at. If you don't play better players.
Okay. Well, I like you, but you're wrong. Okay? You can take somebody, and if you're serious about it, and once again, I'm going to use Robbie Thompson as an example because I know him. Okay? And you do basically kind of what you're saying. In your spare time, all you do is that one sport, and you do anything that will make you better. So, you play handball. You play racquetball.
Yeah.
Okay, you play ping pong, you do hand-eye coordination,
mm-hmm.
et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. is going to make you a much better ball player. So, yeah, there's guys that have natural talent that just don't have to do. My brother was that way. It didn't matter if he practiced or not. I had to practice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, yeah, I did anything you could do that could make me a little bit better, you do it. And if you want to get there, that's the only way to get there. You're not going to get there on God-given talent only.
Right, but I got to say that, you know, if you, let's go to the high school level, whatever region you're at, highest championship game, in that whole entire district region,
mm-hmm. Okay.
There's only one opposing pitcher out of every team
mm-hmm.
that's maybe
good enough
major league pitcher. And so if you only play one pitcher.
You're right. You're right on that part. I like you, but you're right that time. Okay? I'll go a step farther. I probably shouldn't say this, but I've got a couple of nephews that, you know, my sister and them spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars on pitching coaches because they're going to be professional ball players. You know what I mean? And, dude, like you said, you can go to a high school game, you can tell if that kid's got it or he doesn't have it. That's a scout can tell you in a New York minute if the kid has it or he doesn't have it. That simple. And you're correct. Yeah. I've been to those games.
And, you know, I think that also some of the players get fixated on, you know, I want to be a ball player. But if they're a certain position, like that's their position.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get fixated on that, you'll never make it.
Because Robbie Thompson was a shortstop his entire life. Until he got to Double-A.
Yeah.
They needed a second baseman. Well, he's played shortstop all his life. He moved over to second base. End of story.
Favorite scene of Moneyball, if you haven't watched Moneyball.
Oh, my gosh.
We love Moneyball.
Yes, we do.
They take a catcher, and they tell him, we want you for first base. He said, I've never played first base. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. We'll just teach you. It's, like,
it's very easy. And the other coach, he goes, isn't it easy? He goes, no, it's not.
It's very hard. It's very hard. But you do what you have to do because you want to be a ball player.
I played first base the first 10 years. Yeah. Never played anything but first base for 10 years. But basically because at a young age, I could catch a ball no matter how hard you threw it at me. So that's why they put me there.
Yeah.
Okay? So 10 years later, I'm always playing first base, just like what you're saying.
Yeah.
You get up into that junior high school level, you better be able to play something else. They say, oh, my gosh, you're so fast. Why are you not playing the outfield?
Mm-hmm.
You could catch balls that are usually hits.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, man, the guys aren't that good going the outfield. But once I got out there in center field and saw what I could do, oh, my gosh, I fell in love. But, yeah, you got to be able to move around, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
You ain't going nowhere unless you're a pitcher or catcher. Those are, you know, this day and time, that's the two easiest ways to get to the main show is those two positions.
Yeah, those and a catcher – that's a very special position.
Oh, my gosh. I feel sorry for those guys.
Yeah.
My brother would sit in front of a wall, and I would get 10 feet away from him with a bucket of balls and throw them as hard as I could in front of him for him to slide over and stop.
Yeah.
But that makes you different. Yeah. Makes you better.
Yep. Yeah. So, well, I don't know. We'll see where this is going. Maybe we'll hear something about minor league changes coming.
For their sake, I certainly hope so. Yeah. I truly do.
All right, so I saw two new movies this week. Today, I actually took my daughter to go see Shazam. It was really, really fun, very funny. For those of you who don't know, Shazam is part of the DC Universe, so part of Justice League, Batman, Superman. And it was very fun to watch. And one of the things that Shazam is that it's a kid, you know, who turns into a superhero. So
correct.
So my question for you is I need you to go back
mm-hmm.
and put yourself in your kid shoes.
Okay.
So I know that's a long time ago.
Yes, it is.
I mean, like we're talking long. Stone Ages.
Yes.
Time.
50 years ago.
What would be one thing that you'd do knowing yourself as a kid?
Right.
If all of a sudden you got bunch of superpowers.
What's the one thing I would do?
Yeah.
Wow. I would wreak havoc.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wow. Yes. I would just wreak havoc. It wouldn't matter what the power was.
But there had to be something.
I would abuse and use it.
You'd first think, like, oh my God, I'm just going to go I'm going to go and do this thing.
Oh, my gosh. I would just be... first thing I want to do is I want to fly.
Yeah.
I want to be able to fly. I want to be like Superman, you know, Iron Man, whatever. I want to be able to fly.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not Spider-Man as much. I love Spider-Man. It's my favorite, you know, swinging, yeah. You know. But, hey, I don't want to have to hold on then. I want to go.
Yeah. But now, would there be something that is like an everyday item that you would do, but you would take your powers to that and kind of see how you can...
Control things?
Yeah.
Well, you'd have to. That's why it doesn't do you no good to, when you say, if I knew now,
yeah,
back then, you know. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know what I'd do. I thought about it, and I'm like, man, what would I do? And I would
love to be able to fly. I think being able to just, you know, like Superman, you know what I mean? You just jump off the building. Well, that's pretty cool.
In the movie, the spoiler alert, he goes because he transforms into a man.
Right.
So he goes and buys beer.
See, that makes sense to me. Yeah. If you're a kid, that would make logical sense.
Yeah.
You know, if you get the super strength,
yeah,
you're going to whoop up on whoever's been picking on you the last few years. Yeah. You're going to go... You know, put a whooping on them.
Yeah, yeah.
Embarrass them. Come on.
Yeah, and then the other movie I saw was Highwayman, which is a Netflix film, and it's Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson.
I love both of them. Yeah. So I mean, I think I would like it just because of that.
Yeah, they are basically the reinstated Texas Rangers, or they're put on as highwaymen, as you know, highway troopers, because they had disbanded the Texas Rangers at this time to catch Bonnie and Clyde. Now, what's interesting is in the movie, I couldn't help but think of Dean. So this is in the 1930s, and
I wasn't around.
These two guys were assigned this task, but they were competing to catch Bonnie and Clyde with the state police.
Oh.
All right? The state police had all the technology tools. So they had basically the radio in the car where they were basically radioing each other just like dispatching officers.
Right.
They didn't have that. All they had was maps and files in their car, and they're chasing them down.
The old fashioned way.
So they were successful in thinking about, you know, how to catch them rather than using all the toys at the time that was coming out.
That was at their disposal, yeah.
So the reason I thought of Dean is because Dean always says that, you know, in today's world, we all rely on computers.
Y'all can't live without computers and phones.
So, like, we think of that, you know, and sometimes, you know, like I said, you know, he's right. A lot of times he's wrong. But, you know, I think, you know, let's take, for instance, your world in the car business.
Okay.
So I think that mechanics and
they're not other people, now.
They rely too much on the computer to diagnose the problem.
Exactly. Because they're not a real mechanic. Exactly. Plug it into a computer, it tells you change the O2 sensor.
Yeah.
Well, a real mechanic would have already known that.
Now,
if that computer doesn't work, then they're screwed. Yeah. Now, see, I feel the same way in the paint and body shop business. Okay? I mean, we know how to fix a car.
Yeah.
We don't need a computer to tell us how to fix it. And when you get done with the Bondo and the primer and the sanding, as I've shown you, if you feel it with your hand, you can't see it. But if you can feel it, when I paint it, it's going to show. So it's a technique. It's an art that we do. Now, I will say over the years, the frame machine, we measured and we pulled. Now everything is laser. So you screw the laser beads onto the bottom of the car, etc. You type into the computer the year of the make model of the car, and there's no way to make a mistake.
Yeah.
So I understand you can't over pull a car or under pull a car anymore. So there is some good to the madness.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think also even to mix the paint.
Don't get me started.
Yeah.
I know.
You know that.
I just don't believe in it. I don't do it. Yes, I have a paint mixing machine. And yes, I'll type it in and it gives you the correct formula. You put 2 drops of yellow, 1 drop of red, yada, yada, yada. But if it doesn't match, match. It gives you opportunities to go, you know,
backwards, re-engineer.
More red, more yellow, etc. But if it doesn't match, you know, for 40 years, I've added my own color to it.
Yeah.
And done my own spray out pattern and put it outside. And that's what I go with. I don't go buy a darn computer. But yes, so, it is computerized. But so, you still got to have
it. So you think that people would mix the paint better than the computer?
Certain people.
People would mix the paint better.
Certain people.
No, people.
You can't say people because a lot of people, you know, don't know what they're doing when it comes to mixing that paint and shaking it properly and spraying it properly, and et cetera. There's just a lot involved.
Yeah, I think that I agree. I think that, you know, I did HVAC and appliances for years, and I could not stand when a person only relied on the schematic of a unit to diagnose it. And this is, and that's truly the right way to diagnose, is you look at the schematic. But to me, I would explain to people that the actual machine is your schematic. The wires are there. Follow them. You know what all the parts are.
Correct.
They're all there.
Right.
Now, sometimes, you know, obviously, you know, with, you know, cars, you may, you know, you're going to need a schematic. And various things, all the new appliances, everything you need schematics for it. But I just think you need a hands-on approach. That being said, there's a lot of things that I think we do need a computer for, because
that's how everything is now.
It's just way more.
I can go a step farther. They actually have a computer now that we bought this item in South Florida at a body shop that I did some consulting work for, and you type in the year, make, model of the Audi. Is made for an aluminum Audi, and when you do a door scan, I've always taken the door off the car, cut the old skin off, throw it away, take the new skin, bend it over, you glue it now, which, mm-hmm. once again, I'm not a fan of, but we glue it, but to make the old guy feel better, we tack weld it, okay, and you're good to go, right? You put the door in this machine. You type it all in, and it does it electronically for you.
Yeah.
When they're done, you just hang the door.
Yeah.
It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. Craziest thing you've ever seen. And it's almost $100,000 per machine. But after you've done a couple dozen doors, it's paid for itself because you're not paying a person to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now, the person had to take the door off, and we got to put the door back on. Yeah. And, of course, we got to paint the door. But you know what I'm saying? So, like I say, that's just the way of the future. There's no young people getting into what we do. I miss I that. I would like to teach. I think we need to teach young kids. I've tried. But, you know, I could take unemployed people and teach them a living where they could support themselves. Yeah. I really could.
But, well, I don't think they could now. I don't think that you can just learn the trade, because you're going to have to learn how to do it electronically.
No, because you still have to take the ripped up parts off.
Yeah.
Do the frame straightening and put them back on.
Yeah.
So you still need a person to do that.
Yeah. But I mean,
for right now,
there's not.
God knows what's coming.
Yeah. You need to figure out the middle ground, I guess. For, you know, who's doing the,
like, I'm doing a restoration now on a 71 Mustang.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm doing something that most people won't do.
Yeah.
I'm repairing every panel on the car.
Mm-hmm.
She bought the car. Her father bought it for her when she was 16.
Mm-hmm.
No one's ever had it but her. And I can order the panels and weld new ones on and make it look primo. But those aren't her panels. I'm taking her panels and restoring each panel on the entire car. So when we get done, this is really her car. This is the same car she bought. She pulled the engine, the tranny, and the seats out, and I'm doing the shell. And when I get done and give her the shell back, it is just like it was when she bought it in 1971.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot of work, but it can be done if you spend your time on it. I've already been on this thing for 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, on and off, not on it constantly, obviously. She's actually having the engine and transmission rebuilt. She is not buying a crate motor.
Yeah.
So this car, now the bad thing is she's going to spend 30 grand. The car's only worth 25 grand.
Yeah.
But it's not for sale. Yeah. It's only been her family. It's going to stay in her family the rest of her life.
Yeah.
This restoration will have to be done again 15 years from now. Okay? But you're creating a craft
that
not everybody can do.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
But you can't make a living off doing those cars.
Nope. No, you can't. So you got to do a lot of things that, you know, hammer out some cash.
And I'm getting older, but I'm going to do one more. I'm going to do one more for my granddaughter. I'm going to drive it till I die, and then when I die, she gets it. And I'm going to build one more badass car just for me and her.
All right. All right, well, I guess that's all the time we have for today.
Look forward to having a guest. Hopefully, we'll have them next week. We've got a couple of them lined up. We're just trying to work out the details. And we appreciate you guys listening. Please keep listening. And I'm Dean.
And I'm Robert.
And this is...
I like you.
But you are wrong.